This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
RadioProject.org to get a podcast, download past shows, or make a difference by supporting our work. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. The Making Contact team includes Lisa Rudman, George Lavender, Irene Flores, Juanita Carol Young, Lisa Bartfai, Salima Hamarani, Dorian Roberts, Dan Turner, and Barbara Barnett. I'm Andrew Stelzer. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis. The time is 11:30. Coming up next, Kathleen Stevenson hosts the Radio Zine with artists Greg Wilbur, Momoko Okada Sanderson, and Ryota Nishikata as they talk about East and West, the hammered metal object. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd Avenue, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. And also by Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral Eco Brew Pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com.
Good morning. I'm Kathleen Stevenson, and here with me in the studio are three artists. I'm very excited to have them here. They are Greg Wilbur, Momoko Okada, and Ryota Nishikata. And they are all participating in a special exhibit called East and West, The Hammered Metal Object. It opens this week at the Museum of Contemporary Craft, and at Waterstone Gallery. It is an exhibition of contemporary hammered metal art, bringing together 11 artists from Japan and 11 artists from the United States. Welcome, Momoko.
Hello.
Welcome, Ryota.
Hello.
And welcome, Greg.
Bye.
Thank you all for being here. This is a cross-cultural exhibit between artists from the U.S. and Japan. Tell us how this idea originated. How did this come together?
I'll take that, I think. About 25 years ago, with a visit to Japan, I have a sister that lives there. I came in contact with Nishikata's father and him, because he was like 11 or something like that at that time. And with the warmth that his father showed me and the continued contact with him, I went to and fro Japan three or four times and always kept in contact with him and with Nishikata, and wanted to bring them to America to show this form. The raised form is what I do, and it's mostly what the Nishikatas do. We also in this exhibit have a lot of surface embellishment, which is inlay, which is very special. Three or four years ago, Momoko and I met, and she had the same desire to bring some of her people she knew, metalsmiths from Japan, here. And so we did this, and it's been a lot of work. Very rewarding, and hopefully it will be even more rewarding in the next couple of days. Through this, I'll talk briefly. We did a Kickstarter and raised enough money for a very nice catalog, which is for sale, and helped pay getting the Japanese here and their work here, and then the shows themselves. We're lucky enough to have Waterstone Gallery, which I'm a member of, host half of the pieces, and then Museum of Contemporary Craft hosts the other half.
Great. Momoko, do you want to add anything to that or talk about how your involvement worked out? Because you did some work on the Japan connection.
Yes. So for me, I studied metalsmiths in U.S. for the first time, and I didn't really know much about traditional Japanese metalsmithing. So once I went back to Japan, I went to grad school and then studied traditional Japanese metalsmithing, and then realized that how wonderful my own culture is. And also, I really felt that I wanted to bring amazing Japanese techniques to different countries. But always the English was the wall to, you know, the barrier. So I thought, is there something I can do to bring this wonderful artwork and the techniques to different countries? And then I always wanted to bring Japanese people into the U.S. and then kind of introduce each other. But of course, it's not easy. And I met Greg, and he had the same dream as I did. And we decided this show, and then we were just excited to we met each other. And of course, it wasn't easy, but we had the dream and goal and the same vision. So it kind of went amazingly, and without other people's help. I'm really happy to have my teachers here and Greg's friends from Japan as well, and then amazing American artist. So I am very excited to introduce this to people.
And let's talk a little bit about the art itself. Is there a way that the average person would recognize a hammered metal object? Can you talk a little bit about what they would actually see when they see a show of hammered metal objects?
Well, we've got a pretty diverse bunch of work here. It tends to be containers. Maybe everything is containers now that I think about it, that we have here.
I saw a mask in the publicity.
Yes, that's right. We have a mask in a hand. So that's a technique called repoussé and chasing. And that particular artist is Tabitha Tarara from Hawaii. I think that's where she is now. Just got out of school in California. Exceptional work. So we did add her there. Forget the question now.
We were just talking about how people would recognize that it's hammered metal. Would they know immediately, or is there some marker, or is it all over the spectrum?
Depending on the artist, some want to hide the hammer mark. That's not my way. I like to show a lot of hammer marks, so I do that. There's planish marks. I don't know that the general public has any idea what this stuff is. What we're doing is taking flat sheets of metal. There are some exceptions here, and hammering into these closed forms. Easy can spend a month on a piece. So if it's a big piece or really necked in. Look for the hammer marks, I guess, and come to our show and see some stuff. It's not blacksmithing. This is all non-ferrous metal. There is some iron there that's been inlaid, but mostly it's non-ferrous metal. So we have a little silver, a lot of copper, brass, shibuichi. Japanese have access to a bunch of different alloys that, we can get, but it's not so easy.
Momoko, maybe you could describe a little bit your work, and then we'll have Gyota describe his through you.
Yes. My work for this show particularly is the very small. I think it's the smallest one. And because of limitation in the studio. But I did mostly using Japanese alloy inlay work, and I use a lot of mixed media items like wood, glass, and so you can maybe see the difference than other artists because I didn't do so much hammering, but a lot of tiny little hammering. Mm-hmm. But that would be a good example to see so many varieties of hammering techniques. So,
great. Yes. So let's ask Gyota about his work and how he would describe his work for us.
<笑>日本語で今回の展覧会では2つの作品を出品させてもらいました。1つは学生の時から取り組んでる テーマで、金属の板の表と裏を使ったあの作品です。で、学生の頃から続けてるんですけど、今回のあのその方法は実は11年前に縁があって、グレッグのところにあのポートランドにあの来た時に、ジョーという彫金作家の人から教わった方法を使って作ったものです。なので、今回その私の作品をポートランドで展示できることがとても嬉しく思います。で、早くジョーに見てもらいたいというのが 今の気持ちです。で、もう一つの
So I gotta translate before he gets So he has two work, and one is the one that he uses both front, how can I say, the inside and outside, showing both sides, and that's he's been working through his graduate school, and also the other one, oh, I think that's the same one, that he learned when he was here in 11 years ago to visit Greg. And I think Greg introduced Joe Apodaca and learned how to do the technique. And since then, he's been incorporating that technique that he learned here. So he's very excited to show this piece that he learned. And especially he wants to show up Joe to see what he thinks. And so that's the one.
It's a fabulous piece.
Is this a large piece?
Yeah. Well, for this medium, it's fairly large.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Okay.
もう一つ、もう一つの作品は、私の家が祖父の代から続いてる、家業で、鍛金をしてるんですが、そこで続いてる伝統技法のティーポット、夜間の作り方を習得して、今回出品させてもらいました。うん、
So the second piece is the, since he's the third generation of this raising metalsmithing family, and this teapot that he's showing at the museum, that's going to be the traditional technique that he's been handed down through his grandfather. So that's what he's introducing to Portland.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the third generation. Maybe if Diota could talk about the tradition in Japan and how this form of art is valued and looked at, because I think of things like ceramics in Japan, but I wasn't familiar with this being an art form that was traditionally revered. So if he could talk about that.
この3代目とかというそういうこう続いてつながれてくる伝統っていうのに対して、リョータさんはどういうふうに感じてるか聞きたい。
そうですね。やはりいいものだから続けたいというものもありますけれども、やっぱり時代も変わっていくので、その時代に適応した今のものを探っていきたいなとは思います、
うん、時代に合った So of course he would like to keep using this technique, what's really good and useful, but also things changes and generation changes, so he would also like to changeto the new generation to fit in. So he has to think in both ways.
Mm. It's a challenge.
Yeah, challenge.
そうですね。うん、challenge です。
Mm. Yeah. Great. I want to let people know again that I'm Kathleen Stevenson, and this is the Radio Zine, and I'm speaking with three artists participating in East and West, the Hammered Metal Object, opening this week at the Museum of Contemporary Craft and Waterstone Gallery. You just heard from Diota Nishikata, who is here from Japan. Also with us is Momoko Okada and Greg Wilbur. They are also artists who have been working to organize this exhibit for quite some time. So let's talk a little bit about any general differences between the Japanese and the Eastern tradition in this kind of form and the Western tradition. Is that something that you found in bringing together this work or not?
I'll take a shot at that. It is pretty different. As far as I know, we don't have any people that have any real ancestry that, I might be wrong, of the Americans that are here. Mostly, at least in my case, it's either I went to school and I really liked what I was doing. I used to be a baseball player, and hammering and throwing are kind of the same thing. So I've just continued that, and whatever pleasure I get out of that, I do. Some of the Japanese are progressive, and we have one here today that's sitting in on this, that Kashimi, who is not at all. He wants to keep the really strong traditional look, and his great-grandfather came with this. Momoko will know the technique. I'm not. It's a surface embellishment inlay, and I think his grandfather sort of invented it, didn't he? I think he did. So he's keeping that going, and it's very beautiful, and you'll see when you come. So.
But so you're saying that America doesn't have this generational thing, but there is a community of people who do this work. You're part of that community.
There is. It's very rare. That's one of the reasons I got into it. Nobody else was doing it, and I figured maybe I'll have a chance to make it in the art world with doing something nobody else does. And maybe that's true, somewhat. It's not known very much. Now, we've gathered together Americans, and most of them are doing the hammered object, and you'll see that too. And it's all different, where people take it their own way, and that might be part of the American deal. I mean, we get out of school, and how are you going to do it? How are you going to make it? How are you going to get rid of the stuff you make? And at least in my case, I just try to come up with something nobody else will do or wants to do. I'm not going to say can do, just wants to do. So I would say that's it. Yoda, he expressed that he's really wants to come out in this progressive type feel of things, but they do both. Him and his father work together, and they have a great shop, and it's pretty wonderful. So they make all kind of stuff. Tea ceremony, we don't really have that tradition here. We don't have that tradition, some maybe. So a lot of this is about the tea ceremony, either the different containers, vases.
Right, and the technique goes back.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe 3,000 years in some of this stuff. Yurushi lacquer is sort of a certain kind of lacquer, which is made from the roots of a poison sumac tree, and you react to it like poison oak. And so that's a very old, maybe the first ever lacquer developed, probably in Korea. So I've gone on enough.
No. I mean, that's interesting. So it's used, but obviously the reaction is not part of the what's made with it. With this lacquer.
Exactly. And so, I mean, there's all kind of lore about it too, but it's very, very old, and it often used on wood in Japan, and the wood's rotted out and the lacquer's still there. So it's a kind of a plastic stuff.
But natural.
I just came back from a thing I did in France and worked with some lacquer artists, and I learned way more than I'm going to try to say here, but it's an interesting medium, the lacquer.
Momoko, did you want to say anything about the history of this art form?
History... Well, I probably address a little bit about the thing that I noticed that I studied in U.S. and also I studied in England and also in U.S. In Japan, and studying on those three countries, I really realized that American educational, like academia, teaches variety of metals techniques, and so I get to learn enamel and raising and fabrication to variety, and I had a very good time. But once I went back to Japan to apply, I have to pick one specific technique, which I could really realize that Japanese are very choose one technique and study so deep. And I started studying making hammers, making chisel, everything, just tool making, so to kind of appreciate not just the finished artwork, but also a process of making tools, and you use your own tool rest of your life, pretty much. So that was a very different culture that I really learned. And it's not that one is better than the other, it's just so different and how you see things, and probably you can see also through the aesthetic senses. So it was very eye-opener for me, and I'm Japanese, but since I moved to U.S. when I was high school, so I kind of forgot about all this history that I have in my blood. So that's why it's probably, hopefully, the audience can see through those 11 artists, U.S., 11 Japanese artists, that how they approach artwork and how they put their concept into art, and see that if some are traditional tea ceremony items and some are very unique, expressive artwork. So I would like audience to see that difference through all this finished artwork, and knowing that we have different background but beautiful artwork in the end. So
let's talk about how people might see the exhibit and how they might attend specific events that are surrounding these two venues where the work is being shown. What are the logistics of seeing the work, and what are the special events that are happening?
Well, we're officially opening first Thursday, 6 o'clock. The show is set up now, and today's Wednesday, and you can go in today. We have a few little things to add to it, but it's close. So 6 to 9 Thursday, it's open. And then regular hours from then on out for Waterstone, and that's noon to 6, except for Sundays, noon till 4. And then the Museum of Contemporary Crafts, their hours are 11 to 6. Thursday, they will be open first Thursday till 9, I think. One thing we'd really love people to come see is a panel discussion Friday, August 2nd, and that's from 6 to 8 at the Museum of Contemporary Crafts in their lab area up above. So we're not sure exactly how many people will be on the, well, we know how many on the panel. We'll have 6 on the panel, and it'll be three Japanese and, well, no, 4 Japanese, right? And
including then, me, yes.
Yeah. And then a couple of Americans that will come. We have these great Japanese here that are, we still got to deal with the translation and all that, but it should be, well, if you're interested at all in what, maybe talking about marketing a little bit, we may, and then just seeing the work, the PNCA's audiovisual person will be there, and so we'll show some picture. It's not totally organized, but we're working on it. It should be pretty good. Then Waterstone always has an artist talk, and I think that's August 17th. I hope I'm right about that.
Right.
Yeah.
And August 17th, 11 a.m.
11 a.m., and then we'll meet at Waterstone, and then walk over to Contemporary Crafts to see both shows. Each place has 22 pieces, they're pretty neat. They're all over the board. You will have seen these things, objects like this, except for something like this. So, and it's not only an exhibition. They're for sale. We'll see how that goes, but we always hope for that. We paid for this thing, though, pretty much with the Kickstarter. So nobody's going into debt. So that's good.
Is the exhibit going to travel somewhere else?
Yes, it goes to Velvet Da Vinci Gallery in San Francisco mid-September. I think September 24th till October 24th. They're one of the top jewelry and metal art galleries in the world, and exceptional gallery in San Francisco.
Before we leave, I'd like to ask Yota if there's anything that he feels particularly important to say as a person from Japan with this, you know, background and this generational experience to tell people about this art form and this exhibit.
So, this is 多分私の印象ですが、アメリカの作家の人たちの自由な発想と、それから来る、独自の技術、それに比べて日本の伝統的な技術、あと、精巧な技法、その、比較することで面白いものが皆さん見つけてくれれば嬉しいなと思います。
So he also thinks that wants audience to see the difference between Japanese and U.S. Metalsmith work through the traditional Japanese technique into Japanese artist, and also a very expressive and unique personal artwork of American artist. So mm-hmm. he wants everyone to see that difference.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, and the kind of progression that it goes through from old to new.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And that's an I know one interesting thing in the little bios that was in the bios that were in your publicity, that it sounded like some people were almost going on to the sort of conceptual area of this work, which I was mentioned, and I thought, well, that's interesting. I wonder how that would work. Do you know what I'm talking about with some
conceptual stuff? Can you relate to that? I don't remember exactly that.
Some
I think maybe we try to give some political bite to some of the things that we, at least I do, and mine's environmental often, something on that order, but not only. So I don't know if I answered that question, but no,
that's good.
Is that okay?
Because I sometimes, thinking of craft, people don't realize that it also has oftentimes a message behind it. So,
yeah. Well, you're a craftsman too. You know that argument. It goes on and on and on and on. But craft and art, kind of the same thing. Just some's better than others. So that's my theory on that one.
So some of the works will have a definite, obvious message to convey, and some won't.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, we're almost out of time. Anything else that we can mention that we haven't talked about that you think is important to say?
I would like to mention that we had, Momoko and I had a crew of five people, herself and myself, John Wirth, Amy Rudinger, and Eileen Cotter Howell, who were really instrumental in getting this together. We also had a interpreter, Kaori Price, who volunteered even to do the website. Mm-hmm. So this is like exceptional. She's a student of Amy. Amy teaches at Portland Art Institute, and her input was, it's just snowballed into this really wonderful thing. So I hope you all come see it. So.
Mm-hmm. Any final words for you, Momoko?
No, just I really want to add the thank you for everyone who helped and also be supportive. And also I got some donation from Japanese, like Kickstarter, it's called Campfire, and all these people who donated money to make this happen. So I really appreciate and then grateful that I got this part done.
Okay. Okay, so let people know, again, we've been talking about an exhibit that's happening, a special exhibit here in Portland. It's called East and West, the Hammered Metal Object. It opens tomorrow, the first Thursday, but it's available to be seen today if people are at these venues, Museum of Contemporary Craft and the Waterstone Gallery. It is 11 artists from Japan and 11 artists from the United States. And speaking about it with me this morning have been Momoko Okada, Gyota Nishikata, and Greg Wilbur. I thank you all for coming in and for the other guests who are here. Thank you. And this is Kathleen Stevenson for the Radio Zine. Thanks to Kurt, who's engineering for us today.
Thanks,
thank
Kathleen.
You.
Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis. The time is 11:58. Coming up at 12 o'clock is Jazz Lives with your host, Nick Geffro.
The first annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival will take place Wednesday, August 7th and Saturday, August 10th at Park Rose High School Performing Arts Center, 12003 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland. Jim Pepper was born in Salem, Oregon, and lived in the Portland area for many years. A jazz saxophone composer and singer of Native American ancestry, he became a pioneer of fusion jazz in the late 1960s. This event is sponsored by KBOO Community Radio and the Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Thank you. This is KBOO Headline News at Noon for July 31st, 2013. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, Seattle State Transportation Department announced it's using the world's largest tunneling machine to dig a 2-mile tunnel under Seattle. The tunnel will divert traffic from Highway 99 and take a year to dig, allowing the Alaska Way Viaduct to be torn down.
The Bureau of Land Management reported today that they evicted about 90 campers who were illegally using the Bertelsen Nature Park west of Eugene. The City of Eugene, along with the BLM and the Department of Transportation, have recently forced about 150 illegal campers from public lands around the city.
In national news, the Conference Board reported that consumer confidence fell slightly in July, but stayed close to a 5.5-year high. While the hiring outlook for the short-term declined, consumer confidence in job growth also remains high. Consumer confidence is critical because it drives consumer buying, which accounts for about 70% of U.S. economic activity. Economists are hopeful that the nation will see the economy rebound further in the second half as the adverse impact of tax increases and spending cuts lessen.
Home prices increased again in May, reaching the largest annual increase since March 2006. Some cities have now returned to their housing highs. Prices rose 2.4% from April to May in major U.S. cities, with Portland achieving a price rise of 2.2% increase over April. Portland has seen an increase of 12.5% from a year ago. Better home prices are being driven by stronger sales prices and a reduced inventory of homes.
Julie Miller won an $18.6 million lawsuit against Equifax because they failed to address her repeated request to correct her credit report. Because of the erroneous reports, Julie was twice denied a bank loan she needed to help her disabled brother and to add an extension into her home. She only sued when she discovered the extent of Equifax's error: false identifying information, an incorrect Social Security number, an incorrect birth date, and false collection accounts attributed to her. Equifax tried to force her to work through her creditors rather than correct her report.
The U.S. government has agreed to pay $4.1 million to stop a lawsuit against federal agents who